Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 5 of Goddamn GameCube. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on Spotify and subscribe on YouTube. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today. And we are continuing on with our retrospective through the Gears of War franchise. Today, we're talking about Gears of War 3 and Gears of War Judgment. Riley, take it away. Let's start. Gears 3.
Yes, sir. So we talked about Gears 1 and 2 last time. This is kind of because that was more of an overview, I guess, sort of seeing how the franchise started out. And this episode, I think, is going to be the one where they lose me. I want to talk about, kind of dissect, because I didn't play 4 and 5 until recently.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I just kind of fell out of love with the franchise, and this is where it happened. So went back into it, you know, with an open mind, and we're going to be breaking these games down, this middle era of the franchise here.
Oh, boy.
Gears of War 3. This was 2011, a couple years after Gears 2 was 2008. Developed by Epic again, published by Microsoft again. This is the last game in the series to have any involvement from the creator, Cliffy B. It was written by the science fiction author, Karen Travis. The premise of this one, surfs up, dudes.
Uh-oh.
we're taken to the sea.
Oh, boy.
2 years after the previous game, after they flooded everything. Gears 3 follows what's left of humanity after the dissolution of the COG. The coalition of ordered governments, where Marcus and his friends have taken to the sea to find refuge from what remains of the Locust. There's not much left, but there's still some. And their explosive cousins, the Lambent.
Oh, boy.
My favorite.
One of the most annoying things about this franchise.
The Lambent?
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Okay, so just starting out with stuff they changed. You can tag enemies finally for your squad mates to target.
That's Thank a you, Battlefield bit. Bad Company.
Yes. Gotta give them props there. Helps with the bigger ones for sure. I really like that you can swap your weapons and ammo with your squad mates, like Marines in Halo.
I always forget to do it.
Yeah. I think if they kind of shoved it in your face more, it would have worked. But I it got to the point where I was like looking at, like, there's too many weapons. So I was like, oh, who could use a boom shot right now? Give Cole a boom shot,
you know,
like that kind of thing. It's a nice to have, if anything. I have a big problem with the weapon ammo economy in this game, which I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
I discussed in the previous two games, I thought there was too much ammo. There is still too much ammo, but now weapons have lesser carrying capacity, and it's really annoying.
Can we actually, now that we're on this subject, there's something that annoys me. And it's in every Gears of War except Gears 1 and Gears 5.
Okay.
I don't know if you'll agree with me, and I don't know if the audience will either. And in Gears of War 1, I thought it was perfectly okay that you could get sniper rifle ammo from normal ammo boxes.
Right.
In Gears of War 2 through all the way up until 5, you can't.
Right.
So the long shot becomes a kind of power weapon where you get what's in it, then you have to toss it.
Yeah.
And I found myself having less fun with the game because I'm always shooting the Lancer or the shotgun because there's just that you get a ton of ammo for it.
Yeah.
And I found myself more bored of the gameplay loop because I couldn't really use what I want.
Yeah. If the thing about it is that the Lancer is really nice to have, but it's kind of the one that you've got to drop if you want. Because I don't know. I'm never going to drop the shotgun. It's just too useful.
It's too useful.
So the Lancer, you got to drop. And it's just kind of, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. Like, when am I going to run into another useful weapon?
Yeah.
It's tough. But I don't necessarily disagree with you at all. I think I get why they did it. Like, making a sniper rifle more of a power weapon, I guess.
I think for the sake of game balance, it's a better idea, but I think it actually makes the game less fun.
Yeah.
And not to go back to Gears 1 just for a second, I always went sniper rifle shotgun. Like, I was my favorite combo. You could kind of play how you... I hate using the term play as you want, but you were able to have a little bit more fun with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's more balanced the way they have it in 2, 3, Judgment, and 4, but I just don't love it that way.
Right.
But keep going.
No, totally. Getting into, like, just some weapon changes, new weapons. One of the most interesting versions of the hammer burst in this game where you can aim down sight.
Weird, right? It becomes first person?
Becomes first person.
Weird.
It's I don't hate it, but it's...
I don't either.
It's just weird in a third person game. Getting to the new weapons, we're going to do another thumbs up, thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big thumbs up on this one. The Retro Lancer.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's you see it in like cutscenes previously, but this is the first time you can use it.
It essentially shoots slower, shoots more powerful bullets, and you can charge with a bayonet.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting how the iconic Lancer was not the first iteration in the game's chronology.
Yeah, and it makes sense because it's just a normal like knife on the end of it, and it's a little less accurate, I believe, as well.
Yeah, it hits harder, but it doesn't shoot as accurately.
Right.
Kind of neat how they played upon their history, like almost like they played upon their military history without letting you know it existed beforehand.
Right.
Where, like in Gears of War 1, you had no idea there was a previous Lancer.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. I'm kind of mixed reviews on like, you know, when you can put them in the turrets. You remember this? Where
yeah.
You have like four different guns in a turret. I think it's kind of cool when you can put shotguns in it.
Yeah.
That's pretty dope. The Digger, did you mess around with this at all?
I think I spent more time rolling out of the way when other people use it on me.
I couldn't really get into this one, to be honest with you.
Not really. You know what? It's a cool idea when enemies use it against you because it forces you to move out of cover.
So basically what it does is you either one side or the other shoots it at each other and it digs a little projectile under the ground and then
yep.
pops up under cover. Is that how it works?
Yep.
Yeah. It's just I would prefer other weapons at the time. There's a couple more turret weapons. There's a minigun that one person has to carry around the battery. You remember messing around with one?
I think aren't they carrying around the ammo box?
Yeah.
Yeah,
or whatever it is. It's just kind of one person has to be a support.
I actually like that better than the mulcher, because at least there's something.
It's something unique.
It's more involved.
I think I used it more in Horde in this game, which
yeah.
is also back. I had a grievance with you. I shared off mic about the one shot.
Yeah, it kind of makes the regular long shot irrelevant.
Yes.
And like, why is there a sniper rifle power weapon?
And they also, because it works better for like the bigger enemies, like the boomers. But you can tell they kind of nerfed the long shot to make room for this. And the
yeah.
same thing can be said of the sawed off shotgun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just like, I was like, I don't want this.
No.
You know, you only get two shots out of it. Super powerful up close, but whatever. Did you use the fire bombs at all?
Like the fire grenades?
Yeah.
Not really. I feel like
I just want to blow
the regular
up,
grenades
you know?
Are just like more fun.
Yeah.
Do you know what we also didn't talk about in the first one?
What?
Where you can melee people with grenades and the grenades stick to them.
Yes.
It's grenade tagging.
And I'm not sure which one it's introduced in, but you can do it to walls.
It's definitely
well.
In this one.
Yep.
Yep.
It's
you can create
stuff.
Traps with them. It's interesting.
Yep. And lastly, this is kind of just more of a fun one, but the butcher knife, it's kind of fun.
It's fun, but I almost feel like I'm playing like Dead by Daylight or something.
Sure.
Where,
yeah,
like
yeah.
It feels like, oh, I'm the big baddie with the big baddie weapon. Right?
It's just like, it's so specific use that I think it's only like if you see it, you pick it up for like 2 seconds and
yeah.
then you put it down, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of fun that you can finally use it.
I think the roadie run with it is cool where it drags on the ground.
Yeah, it kicks up sparks.
Little pyramid head thing. Cliffy B with the horror references, I think.
Yeah, he's all over it. So can you talk about the lambent enemies a little bit for me?
They're really annoying.
Yes.
And there's something about it that I think is unfun where... Gears of War, to me, why the first one is so successful, not only we talked about how it's kind of scary and et cetera. I think what's cool about it is how gory and kind of grotesque it is, but it's not, but not a bad way. I love the head pop is
yes.
really cool when you're bodying someone with the shotgun, it's cool. But when you're fighting the Lambent, visually, they aren't as cool to shoot at.
No.
And it's not as like gory and visceral. It feels more like yellow paint is coming out of
it's
enemies.
Like Nickelodeon gack or something.
It's really strange. Good reference though.
Yeah. It's, you know what it is? It's like, they also, and I have another point I'd like to dovetail off of this, but the Lambent are basically, so to reiterate, the Locusts are the main bad guys and the Lambent are like mutant versions, right?
Yeah.
So the Lambent, when you shoot and cut them, they bleed this like yellow, bright neon fluid.
Yeah.
And they explode when you kill them too. So they have an animation now where once you like chainsaw them apart, like you kick them away.
And then they explode.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I mean, we said it's like yellow like stuff. It's probably emulsion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's emulsion. But
yeah, but it's what, how it looks.
For some reason, I could be being petty here, it just isn't as fun to shoot them.
No,
it just isn't.
It's definitely, and you know what I was going to say also that is interesting is I think this is in all of them. You can actually turn off the gore. Like if you're playing with a kid or whatever, you know, like it changes the blood into sparks. I think it's in every Gears.
Oh, I didn't know that. I've never played it with censorship on.
Yeah. So that's, but there's all these different kinds. Like there's ones that are really big and they have that like through cover move.
It's really annoying. There's one that like looks like a tree that has like the tendrils or whatever. And like, I think a lot of the like gunker. The immersion holes have become like little like boil trees. Remember this?
Okay. So I think the emergence hole is genius. I didn't talk about it last time that the locust, when they pop up, and I think it's a very ingenious thing where they talked a lot about in the development of Halo, the monster closet idea of where enemies are going to spawn.
Yeah.
It's so ingenious that it's part of the lore too. They just pop up out of the ground. Whereas now they I think a couple of them, so like the normal locusts still do that a little bit. They have this big jumping animation out of the ground, but the lambent, they come out of these big trees.
Yeah. It's almost these trees with boils on them.
And you have to shoot the boils to prevent, because what you can do with the emergence holes is if you roll a grenade in perfectly, it'll close it up.
So essentially what was so smart about, I think the first and to some extent the second Gears was, you know, the respawn point where enemies are respawning from is lore driven.
Yes.
They're coming out of the ground. If you seal the hole, they can't come out.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's very clever. But I just don't like fighting these lambent guys that much.
Me either.
Just a bunch of shit. The former humans you encounter on a boing point, those are very...
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
There are a couple of new normal locusts. I don't really like most of them. There's the ones that fly around and shoot at you.
Yeah.
Annoying. I like the idea of this, actually, the wild ticker that eats ammo.
It just doesn't happen that often.
It happens like twice.
Yeah.
And that's it. They do add a couple weak spots to like the more bullet spongy enemies. Like the Reavers, they have like a gas tank on the back that you can shoot now. And one that I did like was the armored Cantus. I think those are kind of cool.
Yeah, you have to grenade tag them or toss grenades.
You have to get like really close to them. And when you play as them in multiplayer, when you do the roll, it damages them because it's like they're all covered in these like hedgehog spines.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Before we get off gameplay and stuff, I wanted to bring up this one specific thing that's never happened to me in a game before. This happened about halfway through the campaign, where you know how when you get to a blockage that's essentially a loading screen, these games, you press X to go through, you know, razor wire or whatever.
Yeah, you're chainsawing open a door, you're kicking a door down, you're kind of going underneath a short wall or whatever.
Getting from one part of the level,
it's essentially
to the
a
next.
Loading screen.
Yeah. So there was this one part where, I don't know if you remember this, there's like gondolas.
Yeah.
You can either, the part of your mission is to get on this gondola and go to another part of the level. But there's also a side path that is some barbed wire or some other obstacle. And I thought, because you know how these games, they have some collectibles or like extra power weapons or stuff. If you go off the beaten path, you can find stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I tried going through this and pressing X, and Marcus goes, "Can't do that yet." And I'm like,
"What the fuck?
What do you mean?" Mm-hmm. Like, and so essentially what happens is when you go over the gondola, it doesn't work and you need to do something. And it's just like,
oh, it's a hidden wall.
So, but why would he say, it's like he's turning to the camera. He's like, look, you're going to go in that area later.
Fourth wall breaking.
It's never happened to me in a game before.
Wow.
It's fascinating.
Interesting.
It's so weird. Moving on to some more aesthetic stuff. I think the tone is much worse than the previous game. But it gets worse. But it does run better.
Yeah.
I think. It's really, and I'm not really sure what this is, but the new aesthetic and the color palette, like it's, you complained a lot about the last one, but I think this one's way worse.
It's worse.
It's like very, because we are very complimentary towards the first game and how inky and
how bleak everything is.
Dour it is.
And it's, dour is the word I was looking for a couple of hours ago.
It's really, this game is very, just right in the sun. And it just, I don't know. It's like, you know, when you're watching a Tim Burton movie, like very goth, and he has them at the beach, it just doesn't feel right.
No, it's just, I don't know, man. Why are we doing like Gears of War Mario Sunshine? Like what's going on here?
I don't know. Like on one level, I see like, okay, they wanted some contrast, but it just doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work for me.
And there's a lot of like kind of schmaltzy moments too.
Yes.
You know, I just didn't like, cause I'm already like half out on the story in this game, the series. And then you get to this shit. I don't know. We're going to do another voice cast performance review for the new faces.
New faces.
Thumbs up or thumbs down. Okay. Claudia Black as Sam Byrne.
It's fine. What do you think?
She's you got some Australian gears in this one. You got some Aussies.
It's fine.
Crikey, that locust is Sheila.
Is that... Does she actually say that?
No, but it would be funny.
It would be funny.
She saw a berserker. But there's also Hoffman's wife is also in the game.
Yeah.
And she's also Australian. So I don't know what's with the...
I don't know what's going on there.
Yes. Bernie. Tess Masters is Bernie. What do we think?
It's fine. What do you think?
Fine.
Fine. I feel like I'm going to say that a lot with this
one. I have some big compliments for some of them.
Oh, okay.
I feel similarly though about Dwight Schultz as Chairman Prescott. He's a new actor. Same for Peter Renaday as Adam Phoenix. I just think everyone is kind of in the shadow of the four besties.
Yeah, it's so hard to like. It's another one of these situations where like Greg, you didn't get to direct it.
Yes.
You don't get to choose, but. They had to expand on the first one to make a sequel, and I just think your mileage is going to vary.
Yes.
Like, when they expand out from the four main dudes, I don't like it that much. I don't like the expanded color palette, but what else were they going to do?
Like, well, something else that I don't really like about this game is how often they mess with the foursome.
There's
a lot of kind of people filtered. Like, Anya's on the battlefield now, which is interesting, but I feel like Marcus should not be apart from Colin Baird as much as he is in this game, I don't think.
Interesting. Not a bad take.
And you were talking about how all those characters, they feel very memorable. Like they all have
they
a
play
personality.
A piece. Yeah, they have
I don't think these characters have as much.
Maybe I kind of unlocked that when I was talking about that in the previous episode, where maybe my problem with all the new additional characters, I don't know what role they're playing.
Yes. There's very clear kind of comedic roles that they're playing in the first game, playing off each other.
What was Marcus Phoenix, Jerry Seinfeld?
that's a good comparison. But we were talking about Ghostbusters, and it's like you have Baird as Egon. He's the tech guy. You know, it's all that kind of those tropes you're getting into. And when you add more people, they don't really fit into those.
It starts to muddy the waters a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the two that I feel strongly about, Michael B. Jordan is in this game as Jace Stratton.
I forgot about that.
He's kind of there's this guy that's like part of the squad, like here and there. He's probably some fucking comic book character or something.
Yeah.
But and Ice-T as Aaron Griffin.
I forgot about that.
Dude, he's really good at this.
Yeah.
He's because like at that point in the game, I'm really kind of checking out. And he just shows up. He basically insults you and leaves.
Yes.
It's so funny. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming because he's a big kind of player of games and he's like, I want to be in it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know where those relationships are in the industry.
It's pretty cool. But should we get into the story of this one?
Yeah, we have to.
For what it is?
Yeah, for better or worse, mostly worse.
So this game, it also, I was talking, I separated our previous discussions about the acts. They all kind of like they're chapters of the game. You're very Shakespearean five-act play of a Gears of War.
Yep.
This game begins a trend that carries through into the next couple, where I have a hard time telling where one act starts and ends.
Kind of all floods together.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you know, Gears of War, I know the last act is the one on the train.
Yeah, you know? I was about to say, like, I don't know exactly where the acts start and end in Gears 1, but if I were to do it from memory, you have, like, the street, and then the train is the last one. Like, the
underground is the middle.
The underground
Marcus
is the
Marcus's house is the fourth one.
And then the emulsion factory or whatever.
Is the third one,
Yeah. So, like, they're very distinct in my brain. At least the sections of the game at large are distinct.
They kind of, like, they magnetize to the location you're in.
Yeah.
And this one, it's like the story feels less structured because of it.
Yeah.
So you start in the beginning here. What did you think of this like prologue sequence? I totally forgot about it.
I kind of forgot that this was in the game.
It's like the dream where you're defending Marcus's house in the past.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's all this smoky imagery.
And I think
stuff.
I could be wrong. I think you're kind of playing the escalation multiplayer level from the first game.
Yes.
I think that's kind of if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's a dream, and then they do a fake out where they redo the beginning of the first game.
Yes,
it's very God.
Yeah.
And I don't really, because I think that's cool on paper, but I don't know what it was supposed to. It's just like, you remember this? That's how Gears of One started.
I'm not going to bite off too much right now, but yeah. Gears of War 4 did this more successfully.
Yes.
But I'm not talking about that one right now.
That's next week, folks. Yeah. But yeah, it's a little bit of a fake out where Anya comes to get you, and you guys have been living on this aircraft carrier, which I think is a pretty cool setting, considering how the last one left off. Your guy Chairman Prescott comes back in a helicopter. He's like, he's been missing for a while. The cog has dissolved, and everyone is like, oh, this fucking guy, he's back. And he says, listen, Marcus, your father's still alive.
Yeah, you get the big rug pull there, right?
Yes. And he says, you've been working at a secret base, this place called Azura. I'm going to give you a disc about how to get there. And shortly thereafter, he dies.
Yes.
During like a lambent attack. Something else I didn't like about this opening is how broken up it is. It's better than the act one of the last game, but you get into this sticky situation with another big fish, but it's like a lambent fish.
Yeah.
And what happens is it shows you being rescued by Colin Baird and some other people. There's a new Carmine.
Yep.
Who's like very tough in this game, which is funny.
Yep, yep.
And they chose them basically. They dump this big pile of
container of tickers.
Yes, yeah. The moms onto this fish to blow it up. And then it flashes back to a couple hours ago.
Where you essentially have to go play as the other side.
Yes.
Yeah. By that, I mean, you're playing as Cole and Baird who are trying to defeat the sea monster. They're trying to help Marcus from the other perspective.
They're out on the coast on a supply run. And they do have actually a really cool part here where Cole goes to his hometown.
Yeah.
And there's like a kind of flashback to his past where it's very contrived, but he has to run this bomb into the end zone like it's a football. And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's cool. It's like a very character-centric moment.
I say it's a very creative section.
Yes. And he, you know, everyone recognizes him and everything. But my problem with this is that like it should have left off with like Marcus in peril. Like, oh, how are they going to get out of this one?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then you're working up to it. And that's, and then they join together at the end.
But they kind of like, what's the word for this? They kind of already give you the resolution and then make you play it.
Exactly.
It's kind of odd.
It's just redundant.
Yeah.
So that's kind of act one. Act two, I have some compliments to give this game with respect to gameplay improvements. I gave the last one some shit about how they handled the big monsters, and I think the boss fights are more fun with them in this one.
Yeah, correct.
Like you fight the Brumac on the beach in this one, and it feels like a boss fight. You fight the Corpser in its lair later. It's much better than the fight in the first game. There's little Corpsers that bury, you know, come up underground and stuff.
Yep.
I think that's really cool. There's an interesting part where you're like running through locust trenches and they're shooting mortars at you. So you have to run from one to the other. Enjoyed that. And this is kind of the first major stumbling block for me.
Is
when the queen shows up.
The queen. When Nicole Atkins shows up.
Yeah. Essentially, so she shows up and she's riding what, a giant bug?
I think so.
So this is what shows up at the end of Ultimate Edition. And I was like, don't make me think of Gears 3.
Yeah, I know.
It's annoying. But like you have this fight with her. You're on this big like locust barge, gas barge.
Yep.
Which I'm not like, it kind of reminds me of like Rayman or something.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's odd, but this is where it gets too silly for me.
Yes.
You know, like everything else is just kind of right on the line. Like, all right, this is a little silly. It's one of those big Resident Evil moments where you just pollute the tone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We've really muddied down the seriousness here.
She looks like a Power Rangers bad guy.
You're right.
It just looks bad. There is actually a really funny line where Dom says, Do you ever feel like she's fucking with us? And Baird says, no, Dom, this feels like a very sincere attempt on my life. I'll say this, 2 and 3 still have some sharp dialogue between the guys. That's pretty cool. But it's very odd that act two, I think, is really long and act three is very short.
Yes.
So it starts out with this big battle at Hoffman's base, this place called Anvil Gate. Did you enjoy this at all, or are you kind of going through the motions at this point?
It's one of these segments where there's too much like get on the mounted gun and shoot stuff.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that.
It's hard to kind of dig in and enjoy, you know, the gameplay when there's a lot of breaking it up.
Yeah,
there's like a Lambit Berserker at one point.
Yeah, and, is this before like the Half-Life part?
Yes. Yeah, so we're gonna get into that. So the story where it is right now is that they have gotten this disc from the chairman who died, and they brought it to Hoffman to decrypt it because he's the only guy who has the technology.
Yeah.
What you find out is that this base where Marcus's father is being kept is protected by man-made hurricane machines or something. You know, that old chestnut. Mm. So the only way to get there is underwater.
Yep.
So the gang kind of needs to find a submarine and fuel for it.
Did they take this from Majora's Mask?
What are you talking about?
Isn't in the water section, you can only get into a base like underwater because there's like a storm around it?
Oh, Great Bay Temple.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
With the turtle.
I'm thinking.
You're thinking.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a fan.
Yeah, Click big fan. Big fan. No turtle, though. Keep going.
No turtle. So you need fuel for a submarine. So I'd like to get your thoughts on this part, actually. So Dom suggest that he says his late wife, we discussed her demise last episode, Maria, her hometown, he thinks they'll have some luck finding fuel there. And they go there and things go to shit pretty quickly. You want to open up about
they run into the head crabs and Father Gregory and all that shit.
All those guys, yes.
Essentially, they run into like, I have in my preparation here, they run into the Half-Life Halo Flood human Lambent ?
That's the thing, is that the Lambent fulfills such a similar role to the Flood.
Yeah.
Where, you know, when you're going in Gears of War 2, you go down into their city and you hear the voice on the
intercom.
On the intercom, it's the exact same as Halo 2.
Yes.
Where it's like, they won't take over our city. You need to fight them back. And it's they do the exact same thing in this game. And like the humans are now becoming
Lambent. You know, you made an accusation of The Last of Us where they're too heavy handed with the influences.
Oh.
I think Gears is worse.
We're gonna get into that for sure.
But
you need to talk about the big character moment here. I need with Dom's sacrifice here.
Oh, jeez. I actually think this is not bad.
No,
it's not bad.
I think all right. So here's my opinion of this.
Sure.
And you can open up afterwards if you feel compelled. But like Dom, I knew he was doomed. I was like, they can't kill Marcus. They're probably gonna kill Dom. You know, he lost his wife. He lost his kids. He's very miserable all the time. I don't think he's long for this world. And I think it's a very effective impact on Marcus. They start playing the Mad World cover.
That was very tasteful.
They did vocals.
The throwback. Yeah.
It will, if you saw that commercial all the way back, it'll get the feels going. I just think that the way that he dies is really stupid.
Well, you mean like him driving the car and causing a giant explosion?
Yes.
It's
to take out the Lambent.
You know what it is? I think here's the bullshit part of it for me. These dudes have gotten out of worse scenarios.
It's true.
They're surrounded by generic enemies. Isn't that the whole game?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I actually don't dislike him getting in a car and driving fast and going Thumb on Louise on this kind of stuff.
Sure.
Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Weird reference. I think here's the thing. There are worse things to hate on in this game than this part.
No, yeah.
It's fine.
I feel like if you look at like Lieutenant Kim in the first game, his death is like gnarly.
It's awesome.
You know? And then you got this. It's like, ah.
Yeah.
He deserved a better way to go out, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, he's gone. I'll give him that. They commit to it. He hasn't been resurrected yet as some kind of horrible monstrosity.
Nope.
He's gone.
He's literally toast.
You're just without him for the rest of the game. And so Act 4, you're getting into this. I actually like this area a lot, this like Ash City.
I have this in my notes, is this weird Far Cry boss section with the Ash Men.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I see what you mean there.
Yeah.
I just think it's a cool setting.
Yeah.
And it's very quiet after Dom dies, so it's kind of contemplative. There is something really weird about it, though.
Go ahead.
There is this bizarre little subplot where they leave boxes of ammo on the edges of cliffs. Did you run into this?
No.
They'll leave ammo boxes on the edge of the cliffs, and they keep taking it away from Marcus. When you go to try to pick it up, it'll be like a box of ammo in a car, and the car will fall off the cliff.
Interesting.
And then as it keeps happening, Marcus goes, "Oh, come on."
That's funny.
It's just like, it's a weird, you know, I guess to kind of lighten things up a tiny little bit.
Yeah.
At that point, it's weird. And the whole thing with, I think Ice-T is really funny, but his whole subplot is such a waste.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't really go
anywhere.
I think
that's why I called it the weird Far Cry part.
Yeah.
Where there's a weird like gang boss guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he flips you off and it gets lost in his little trolley and he's gone. And then there's a part, so you get your fuel here. And there's a submarine section. Do you remember this?
Yeah, the Star Fox part.
So what do you think of this part?
You know, I lean negative on vehicle sequences.
I keep waiting for them to nail it, and they didn't do it this time, unfortunately.
What is the Star Fox submarine called? You remember that? Where you're on the ocean floor?
Oh,
I don't remember. Maybe if in the comments, somebody write it.
I remember the planet being really cool, but yeah. Basically the same thing where you're in a turret underwater and you're shooting at those fish.
Fine.
And you get to this base. I think so Act 5 is the base, and you get to, I like when you arrive, it looks like kind of like an old train station.
Yes.
Looks kind of cool.
Yep.
You know, the locusts are already there, of course, and they're trying to stop you from meeting Marcus's father, who has been working at this base. And it was kind of this, I guess when the war broke out, it's kind of this haven for like the elite or like, you know, the top
some Bioshock
scientists.
Influence here.
Yeah, for sure. Just sort of a paradise kind of away from everything. And you have to reconnoitre with Marcus's father, who has been working on the next big anti-locust weapon. And it'll definitely work this time.
Yeah.
Full of shit.
Yeah.
It's just like it feels like... Charlie Brown with the football. Like, why should I care if they're going to be back next
time?
We
also haven't mentioned that the Locust Queen kind of mocks you about your father throughout these games.
Yes.
And you don't quite understand what
son of Adam Phoenix.
You don't really know what the connection is yet.
Yes.
You kind of do right about here.
And something that really bothered me about this game when it came out and still does is how vague they leave it and how little of an impact it has on the story about like, what is Marcus, basically all you learn in this one is that Marcus's father was involved in the creation of the locust somehow. And the emulsion has like a bacteria in it or something that's causing the mutation. And there's some bad blood between him and the Locust Queen where he is trying to wipe out both the locust and the lambent. And she only wants the lambent gone. And that it's just really contrived, and like I just didn't, because I really like that chapter in the previous game where you're in the lab and you're learning like, oh shit, are the cog responsible?
Sure.
Something we've seen before, but it adds a little wrinkle. And you don't really learn that much in this game, which I don't love.
No, and I think I could be wrong. This is right around the time where we find out why Marcus was imprisoned.
Yes.
Right? He's kind of going to bat for his dad, holding information at the, I almost called it the Spencer Mansion, the Phoenix Mansion.
Well, he was, his dad was in trouble and he deserted his post to go
help
him out. And he thought... You see like debris fall in front of him and he assumes that his father was crushed.
That's right around here, right?
It's
at some point in the game.
And yeah, it kind of wraps up here when you're trying to detonate this anti-locust weapon and you have this terrible final boss fight. What do you think of this one?
We're like essentially like this boss fight is like, I have this vision of like Fire Emblem on Game Boy Advance if Nick was in the room where you're casting like when Athos is casting like the biggest like holy spell and it's just like evaporating people with light.
Yeah.
That's essentially the final boss is shooting big scary light at you
like
and you have to Hammer of Dawn her, right? Is that what's happening?
The queen is riding around on her big bug. And I don't know. This is just like the silliness is overpowering. Like, think about the train in the first game and how exciting that was and how
it was
just
cool.
Gritty
it
was. And this is just like Power Ranger shit. You know,
did you say Power Ranger shit?
Yeah,
nice.
It is. What else would you call it? She's flying around like a big monster.
Yeah,
it's dumb. And you find out that Marcus's father was running tests on himself. He was injecting himself with emulsion or something, so he's affected by it too.
Yeah. So when he sets off the Lambin killer, it's gonna kill him.
He dies for real this time. And I always thought this was like incredibly tasteless, but like how the queen dies. How Marcus is just like that's for Dom, bitch. And he just like shivs her.
Yeah.
It's the ending sucks.
If they're
right?
gonna go schmaltzy, at least chainsaw. Right?
Oh yeah. that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think of the ending?
I think it's okay. I think you get a little bit of an emotional pull because he finally gets reunited with his dad and then he becomes just dust. It's fine.
I didn't really talk much about Anya because she doesn't really have much bearing on the story, but they kind of have a little moment on the, what I like about it is he takes off his armor for the first time.
Yeah.
I thought that was
you
cool.
haven't seen his, that since he was in jail.
He takes off his iconic his bandana.
Yeah.
And he goes down and sits on the beach and she kind of accompanies him and
yeah.
That's the end. Can we do grades on this one?
I think I'm going C+ again.
I'm going C+ for this
guy. Yeah, I think have to.
I don't know, because I respect definitely the technical work that went into this and making the game run. And you know, some of the weapons feel cool and some of the ideas are cool. But, you know, just ask me right now, do I want to play it? The answer is no.
No, and, I think it's actually the same. My same critiques of the second game, I think, get worse in this one. Although this game has some highs that I like better than the second one because lack of vehicle sequences, I like it a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I think the worst parts are worse.
Yeah.
So I think I have to go C+ again.
It's one of those. This is another problem for me where linking it back to Halo, thinking about neither franchise, when we got to the end of the trilogy, did I feel like it was a satisfying conclusion.
Do you feel better about Gears or Halo?
Halo.
Really?
Because I like Halo 2 more than Gears of War 2.
That's true. That's true.
But in terms of like wrapping up the story, it just felt very, especially in this, very rushed.
Yeah.
Very like unearned. It doesn't, evidently there's Gears of War 4, so they didn't really resolve anything.
Yep. That's true. Interesting. There's some give and take between Gears of War 2 and Gears of War 3, but I think it ends up about the same for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. So this is the last one with our guy Cliffy B.
That's right.
I wanted to ask you what's your take on this guy and his role in the series?
So interesting guy.
Yes.
I think he's a little bit understated when it comes to his involvement in what we've been calling the golden era of modern games.
Yeah.
Like 06 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was like this very, what's the word for this? I'm going to use the word cool.
Yeah.
He was this guy in the mid 2000s and he gave you this sense that game developers are cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, he walked out, I think, on stage with a replica Lancer.
That was the moment where I was like, I think I like this guy.
Yeah. I think he's also interesting. Like later in his life, he invests in musicals and other creative endeavors.
Yep.
Interesting guy. I don't want to speak too much about the latter parts of his career, only this, but
yeah.
It can't be understated that I think Gears of War 1 is probably the most influential cover shooter ever.
Yeah.
Maybe people would argue with me that that's Killzone, but I would say it's Gears of War 1.
Yeah.
And I think, you know what? I think I actually said this. I think I tweeted this at him where I said, you know what? For Gears of War 1 alone, like I give you the salute.
Oh,
like,
of course.
It meant a lot to me.
It's one of those things where, like when he came out with the chainsaw, like revving it up, he looked so excited. And I was just like, there's a version of this guy that doesn't work for me, but he's working for me. You know what I mean?
Like
in terms of, I really admire the, when Miyazaki won his award at the Game Awards last year and how humble and quiet he was.
Yeah.
And normally I don't like it when people are very, you know, kind of fun and in your face about their art, but he was very
Can I use a word for you?
Yeah.
I think it's genuine.
Yes.
He was very genuine. Like he thought he made a good game. He was excited about his ideas.
Enthusiastic.
And he was right.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's just interesting because I feel like there's a lot of, as we're going to learn in the next couple, like other people take over the reins of the franchise. There's a lot of debate in other series about like, well, was Star Wars better or worse after George Lucas left, you know, that kind of thing. And it's one of those things where I don't feel very strongly about Gears of War 2 or 3. So it's not so much like tied to him as it would be like George Lucas.
That's interesting. Like I really tie the first one to him.
Yes.
The other two, I not that I forget he was there,
right.
But I don't really associate the sequels with him.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
But he was a big part. He was the leader.
Yeah.
And he has it. I did want to kind of dovetail into this quote here where he was addressing this quote by him was actually maligned by some reviewers where he was not happy that Gears 3 reviewed worse than Gears 2 in some places. And he said, I know for a fact that Gears 3 is better than Gears 2 on every level. And I'm like,
he's not. I the only thing I would disagree with is it's not better on every level.
Right.
I think in terms of the pacing, it is.
Yes.
But I can't. You and I are so out on the art style and, yeah. and the visual. How do I put this? It's a situation where they went after an art style. They went after direction and crushed it, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
So like, I just don't agree that it's better, but they achieved what they wanted. Yeah. I just don't agree.
I think I get what he's saying with respect to that, because Gears of War 3 does feel pretty much finished. There is a final boss instead of hold the trigger and kill it like Gears of War 2.
Yeah.
Matchmaking works in this game.
Yeah.
Horde is improved upon. I get completely where he feels that it's just a better complete package. I just don't like fighting the Lambit as much. I feel like all the tonal stuff is worse. I don't think it's a clear cut victory over two.
Do you remember a couple of seasons ago where I was really grasping for a phrase where like you do your best, but you just can't hack it.
You just don't have it.
You just don't have the vision.
Yeah.
Like it's just, I think Gears of War 3 was probably the best game they could have made with that vision, but I don't like the vision.
Right.
So I'm just not for me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So getting into the next one.
We talking about Gears of War Judgment?
Judgment.
Can I say something right off the bat?
Yes.
I thought Judgment had an E in the middle of it.
I was going to ask you how you prefer to spell it, because it's but either way is acceptable.
I always thought this was misspelled.
It wouldn't be too surprising.
Because I was like, did they take out the E because of Emergence Day, like E-Day?
No, you can spell it either way, technically.
I've never seen it spelled this way except for this game,
yeah,
without the E in the middle.
It's weird.
Yeah, but so is this game. Yeah,
it is.
Go ahead.
So Gears of War Judgment, this was again published by Microsoft, but this time, in addition to Epic, it was developed by People Can Fly.
Yes.
Who previously collaborated on the PC port and that game Bulletstorm.
Yeah.
Did you play that game?
Only a few minutes, but I do recall the game.
It's like, okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. So first thing right off the bat, this game takes place prior to the first three games. Can we stop doing this?
Yeah, like, the prequel stuff.
It's just such a predictable move where, okay, we finished the trilogy, and where else do we go? Backwards.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily always a story that has to be told.
This is like essentially Baird's story, right? Baird's, kind of.
Yes, but it is a little more interesting than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
But at the time when it was announced, I was like, I didn't like Gears of War 3. I don't want to play this.
And I actually, we'll get into all this. I don't love how it's organized. I don't love how it's directed. I think if I were to put my director hat on, I would have done it differently.
Sure.
How do I put this? I actually may disagree with you a little.
Okay.
I don't dislike that it's a prequel, because doesn't Gears of War 1 start 14 years after the world went to shit?
Yeah.
There's a chunk of time in there that maybe could be interesting.
I
just don't think it's organized in the way that I would have done it.
Also, it was only 2 years after the last game.
Yeah, we're a little satiated at this point.
Yeah.
I just would have directed it differently, but keep going.
Yeah. So the title Judgment refers to, you know, you have Baird. Cole is along for the ride, thank goodness. And a couple other new characters in this squad, Kilo Squad. They're put on trial for disobeying their orders. That's kind of the whole premise, is the structure is this trial that's over the course of the game is unfolding. So right off the bat, this game is different in that it is far more arcadey than the original trilogy.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. I'm not saying I'd hate the game.
Right.
I don't like how it's organized.
I think but each chapter is very short and linear, is something you're talking about. And it is also, every chapter is graded immediately based on a number of criteria, including like your kills, headshots. I learned a new gaming phrase. Is called gibbing, when you blow an enemy to pieces.
I didn't know that.
I don't know where that came from, but that's a criteria for how they grade you. Is the way they set this up here like a total non-starter for you?
Kind of. I think also it's a problem where they also do it 40 something times in a row.
Yeah.
Like, I forget how many little missions the game is broken up into. I think it's like 40.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I want you to talk a little bit more about the story before I dig into this, because I have some things that I would have done differently. But I kind of want you to go a little further first.
Okay. Yeah. So it's very differently structured than the first three games, with each little mission being kind of its own graded experience. There is something that I think is interesting on paper, which is the declassified quests, which is basically at the start of a mission, you have the you can opt in to have some sort of modifier during this chapter. So I think this is kind of interesting because a big part of it is this trial and how it's about what is and is not on the record, and yeah, and whose testimony is being truthful. And
if you don't mind, I'm going to jump in right there, because yeah, that's where I have a problem with this.
Yeah.
Where, if you ask me, there isn't enough, how do I put this? The game displays this as, the game is separated into essentially, I'm going to call it 40, I don't remember how many, 40 tiny little arcadey missions. Mm-hmm. You have the option at the beginning of a mission to give an alternative take to what happened on the mission.
Yeah.
Example, like, I don't know, there are a bunch of them, but oh, the squad only had handguns, right, but it was not reported.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Or the what I found interesting about this, though, is that the COG is like, basically you're learning more about the COG and how they try to cover shit up.
Well, what I don't like about this is that there's no real consequence for not doing it. You might as well declassify them all, because you only have to do a certain amount to get the bonus chapter. So right, it doesn't really matter. And what I would have done differently is I would have had the game play out normally, and then you go back. Essentially, I would have...
Oh, Master Quest?
No. I would not have had every mission be declassified as an option.
Okay.
I would have done the whole game normally, and then when your character has a rebuttal in the trial, you replay certain segments, and they're very different.
Oh, okay.
Almost like the COG is accusing you of what you did. You play it out. But at the end of the game, there are three or four segments where you start to learn the real truth and you play it out very differently.
Yeah.
Because you have to do all 40 of them and all 40 of them have an alternative, it becomes very arcadey. The differences between classified and declassified are not big enough.
Right.
Oh no, we use different weapons than reported. Who cares? Like, it doesn't really matter.
Well, yeah. But so some other examples, like weapons and ammunition scarcity, which is like implying that the COG was not properly supplying them.
Sure.
They don't let us use locust weapons. We didn't have a choice because they didn't give us guns.
Mm-hmm.
Enemy placement changes, like, oh, they're actually, you know, this was actually a lot harder than the COG was implying. Hammer of Dawn strikes were occurring.
Let me give you a good comparable before you continue.
Yeah.
Remember the original Resident Evil 2 had a B scenario instead of an A, and it's quite different. You're seeing the other perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think that may have been a better play.
Yeah, no, completely.
Yep.
But in terms of, I like that it made story sense, where that you have dialogue that changes depending on if you chose it or not. I actually didn't choose very many of them because I just wanted to like, let's get through this shit. You know, I'll fuck around with it, but I don't want to make my life any harder than this. Yeah. You know,
I did them all.
Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, it's something else. Something that bothers me way more is the changes to the control scheme.
I did not like this at all. I think it can't be understated how buttery smooth Gears of War plays. And this one is a little clunky. Because in the original games, the four weapons are on your D-pad, up, down, left, right.
Yeah.
Now it's you're pressing Y to cycle between two weapons and not four.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
It's really like there's no reason to use a pistol other than bonuses.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense because now you can have a main weapon. You can only have two weapons. One of them could be a handgun if you want.
Right.
But why would you do that?
Why wouldn't you just do like Lancer? Two big weapons. Shotgun, whatever.
I don't like this reshuffling, this rebalancing.
It's not as the grenades are on a different button. I thought was going to be a way to change your preference, but there isn't.
I don't like it.
Definitely don't like it as much. Something that we haven't really talked about much, but I thought it was worth mentioning because apparently fans are not happy with this, is that the multiplayer was also significantly changed.
Yes.
Where in standard deathmatch, you can't play as the Locust in this one.
Yep.
There are no perfect active reloads in multiplayer. There is no downing or executions. You can choose your starting grenades. Something I do like is that you walking over ammo picks it up, so you're doing less of that. Talking about like Rayman and shit, you know, it's just much smoother to do it.
And by the way, it's 42 segments. I did 42. Have that in my preparation.
There you go. But using the shield, like you can use a rifle with it now, which doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Same thing with like picking up dudes.
Yeah.
Using them as hostages.
I don't understand this. They felt the need to change this user interface. I don't get this.
So much that like the frag grenades are sticky, but you can't stick them to the walls.
I don't understand a lot of these changes.
And you can jump down from heights, and that's pretty much it. But yeah, weird stuff. They do add a couple new weapons. Maybe thumbs up, thumbs down, these guys. The Marksa, you know, this rifle.
I actually like it a lot.
I do as well.
Yep.
They do something interesting in this game, which is I have some problems with the world building of Gears of War, but I did think it was interesting that they have like a USSR analog.
Yeah.
You get some characters on this one that were part of that or are part of that world, and you start to see some of their weapons. And this is basically this is like a single shot. Medium.
It's like a semi-auto sniper rifle.
It's great.
Yep.
There's a mod for it that the Locust made called the Breach Shot.
Or it becomes a bolt action pull semi-auto sniper rifle,
yes.
Which would not make it semi anymore, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Becomes a bolt action version.
Right.
And there's no scope on it. It's kind of interesting.
It's a little bit closer range.
Yep.
I didn't really mess with this one much. The Bushka grenade launcher.
Nope. Didn't mess with it at all.
It's just another grenade launcher, but they do add some grenades, which I think are interesting that I don't think ever come back, which are the beacon ones, which mark enemies.
Yeah.
And the ones that give out health gas.
Yeah. That auto regen your health quicker.
Yep.
Interesting.
And never brought those back. And the only new enemy I really think is incredibly stupid is that, that one Locust that turns red when it gets mad.
Oh my goodness.
I hated those so much.
Yeah. Dude, I know.
Those guys sucked. Okay. It's clearly like using the same engine as 3, but aesthetically, it didn't really bother me as much for some reason.
No.
It's just kind of normal Gears of War. I think it would have been a great opportunity to overhaul the aesthetic here and make it further resemble the original, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in the past.
Because it is before.
Yeah. You're seeing some of the cities while they're still standing. I was actually really surprised that the Krill weren't part of it at all.
I kind of forgot about them.
Even because I don't think what we mentioned in the last one is that the lore reason is that the light mass bomb seemingly wiped them out, and that's why they're not in any of the future ones.
Okay.
But before, no reason not to even have
they
them
would
as,
exist.
As an opt-in. You know what the thing that bothers me about the opt-in is that it reminds me of I was in the Honor Society at college my first year, and I realized that some courses you needed to ask for extra work. And I just realized, I was like, that's such bullshit.
That's stupid.
Asking for extra. And that's what this felt like to me.
I just don't think they should have structured it this way.
No.
I think it should have been A scenario, B scenario.
Yeah. I think that would have been very interesting. Couple new voices I want to get your thoughts on. We have Chris Cox as Garen Paddock.
It's fine.
You know what it is? I brought this up to you. He is doing a very stereotypical silly Russian accent.
Yeah.
But I
don't hate this character.
No, I really like the idea. I think this is a very important thing that more storytellers, world builders could take benefit of. You are going to get some people, some asses in seats, if you have a character who hates everyone else.
Yeah.
Because if you hate Gears of War, you'll love this guy.
Yeah.
You know, like he's just trash talking everyone.
Yeah.
And he's has kind of an interesting story. So I thought his performance was solid. Allie Hillis as Sophia Hendrick.
What do you think?
You're giving an
What do you think?
Yep, I'll give
not enough. Like, I think we really nailed it with the four main dudes each filled a role.
Yeah,
and now it's I don't quite know what role people are filling.
Right. Besides, like, girl.
Yeah,
we need a girl in the squad.
Yeah,
I don't know. Bruce Thomas as Colonel Loomis. I like him.
Yeah,
he's a good villain.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, though. We're going to get into the very quick story here.
Mm-hmm.
The acts are divided by character in this one.
I think this is kind of neat.
Yes.
You honestly, each of them kind of has to take the stand, and you start going through their story.
Baird, Cole, Sophia, Paddock, and I think Baird again.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of wraps up.
Yep.
It's cool, but because of the game's kind of arcadey nature, they're all very short.
Yes.
So I'm not going to break it up the same way. I'm just going to go through the story. Baird and the rest of the Kilo Squad, they're put on trial by this guy, Colonel Loomis, and the game flashes back to the series of decisions that led to this moment, right? So they encounter this, you know, this locust general. He's like, oh, he's the toughest one we've ever seen. It's really like, I don't know how much different is it than the other guys we fought already.
It's not. You
know,
it's well, not they really. Haven't. It's the past.
That's true.
Yeah.
So it's like nothing we've ever seen before. General Karn.
Yeah.
And his army is steamrolling the city. So they say, hey, we know this new technology exists, this light mass missile. Can we use it? And Colonel Loomis says, no, can't do war crimes. And they're like, fuck you, we're doing war crimes.
Yeah, essentially.
Your team goes off and you find all this... Mm-hmm. information for how to do it, very much like gopher missions, you know, some cool areas, but whatever. And they launch the missile and they're arrested, right?
Essentially.
That's the whole overarching story getting up to the end, right? Yep. And what's obviously is inevitably going to happen, they're in this courthouse the whole time. It's kind of like, it's ridiculous how long that, like, the locusts are barging through the door and the colonel's like, no, we're holding this trial today.
I know. Yeah. You know what? I don't think, I said this a lot in this episode, but this is not a bad idea. I just don't like how they do it.
Right. Yeah.
I kind of like how they have to do a trial and locusts are beating down the door, so we got to hurry this up, but they just don't.
Right.
They should.
Yeah. And you know, so they show up and
wouldn't it have been interesting if they rug pulled instead? You only get about a third through the trial and then it goes to present day.
Yeah.
Would they save it till the end and it's very generic?
I think maybe halfway would have been.
You think you're going to get each character, but you don't.
That'd be kind of interesting. I don't know. Anything other than what happened.
Yeah. Anything other than what they chose to do.
It sucks, but, you know, the locusts break in and Paddock kind of saves his face a little bit by saving Loomis.
Yeah.
And Loomis is the one to very ingloriously execute the locust general.
Yes.
And he's like, all right, you're free to go.
Yeah.
But he demotes Baird and is like, you'll never be an officer again, which is why he's a private
when you meet him in
Gears of War.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. And there is also, I didn't play many of the DLCs for these games. This is the only one I really did where it plays out a lot more conventionally. It's not like
it's not the segmented
graded yep. or anything like that, where you basically catch up with Paddock during the events of Gears of War 3. When Cole and Baird go off on their own. And I think it's kind of cool. Like he crops up a couple times over the course of the series and it just kind of ties it in with, you know, he helps you out in some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's really it for this game. And I think we should start with grades. What are you going to give this one?
I think I'm going C+ again.
I'm going C+ for this one.
Yeah.
It's saved by the good ideas that they didn't execute well.
Yeah.
And it's just a shame because I just like, I saw this game announced and I was just like, no, you know,
yeah.
It's one of those. And I really had to work up the nerve to just be like, we gotta do it for this
yeah,
series.
Sure.
It's a major enough entry.
Yeah.
And I did want to pose a question to you. Would you like to see Gears experiment with other types of spinoffs in the future? Do you have any ideas for
They
that?
Already did. They did Tactics, right?
They did Tactics, apparently.
Yeah,
and I didn't apparently play it. It was okay.
It was okay. Here's it's just this is tricky. Where I don't get to have my way here.
Right.
I don't dislike what they tried to do.
Right.
I kind of like the idea of the trial. There's 14 years of we don't know what happened before the first game. It's just I would have done this a little bit more. I don't want to use the word smartly. I would have been a little bit more clever, a little bit more cheeky. It's so obvious that each chapter is each character taking the stand.
Right.
It's so obvious. And at the end, it goes to the trial as present day.
You know what's funny is that it's kind of disagreeing with my point a little earlier where the Gears of War 3 acts were very they did not flow together. These don't flow together because each character is an act, but I couldn't tell you what happens in each
Me
one.
Me either. No, not at all. I just think you know, not you, but the royal you knows so little about the Gears universe.
Yeah.
I'd be okay, like, with a spinoff. There really hasn't been very many, but I just don't think this was the right... They just didn't execute this.
I think, you know what it is? I have 2 points, then we can wrap.
Yeah.
Number one, I thought it was cool to structure this as a trial because... they seem like the cog kind of like shows its ass a lot over the course of the series. Like it's very clearly not a virtuous organization.
Yeah, sure.
And Marcus's trial in the very beginning of the first game, you know, talking about his trial was a sham, sir, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just, it's building this culture of like their society awful.
Can I interrupt you and say something funny?
Yeah.
If they're going to do a game about a trial, why isn't it Marcus's?
Should have been.
What are they doing?
Oops.
I mean, like, wasn't that the whole point of whatever?
Maybe they wanted it to be about somebody else, whatever. But
dude,
play as somebody else.
I'm right.
I don't know.
Come on.
But my other thought is what I would love to see is a Locust spinoff.
You're not wrong.
Locust versus Locust, like two generals fighting each other.
Or like Locust versus Lambent. Sure. Or whatever. Something.
No.
No, no. I know. I mean, I don't like Lambent, but it's made known in the plot the Locusts don't like them either.
Yeah, but I just mean in terms of like what I'd like to see as like a fun spinoff.
Be careful what you wish for. We got a Gollum game and it sucked.
Yeah, but
I'm joking.
But like the Locust have, and they're fun to play in Horde.
Yeah.
So the Locust have such a fun sandbox with all the weird creatures and stuff.
Yeah.
You could do something fun with that.
Yeah,
but
you're not wrong.
That's all I got for this one.
That's all I got. I think we're going to wrap for this one, mm-hmm. and we'll see you guys next time for Gears of War 4 and 5. And we'll see you next time. Thanks.